For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to another edition of GVN Talking Comics Interview, your home for conversations with some of the best writers, artists, and creators in comics. On today's show, we welcome multi-talented DC comic writer, Jeremy Adams. Now here's your host, Martin Sexton.
Welcome to another edition of GVN Talking Comics Interview. I am your host, Martin, and today we have the pleasure of talking to multi-talented writer, Jeremy Adams. Jeremy's worked in many facets of writing, including animation, television, and comics. But recently, Jeremy was signed to an exclusive contract with DC to keep him doing what he's been doing for some time now, writing great stories. So let's welcome Jeremy Adams to GVN's Talking Comics. How are we doing this morning, Jeremy?
I'm doing great. No, it's great. I love to talk comics, so this is perfect.
All right. Well, you're my man. Okay, we're good. All right. Okay. Well, since, like I said, this is the first time I've had an opportunity to talk to you, so I want to start out with a little bit of your creative beginnings. When did you first develop an interest in writing, and whose work inspired you maybe to explore that creative path?
You know, I obviously was an avid reader growing up. My dad had drawn some comic books, but my parents were divorced when I was about five, and I'm sure psychologically, you know, I was clamoring to be close to my father in some way through comic books. So I've had comics since I was a little kid. I love comics. Comics taught me to read, essentially. But in terms of actually it being a career, you know, writing, I remember reading Dragonlance Chronicles in junior high, and that really affected me because I just loved it. And it helped me on this journey of just passionately love reading. And then, of course, as every junior high boy knows, you somehow get to Stephen King, and that just takes you down a totally different, you know, framework. And you start to realize, hey, there's a guy that writes these. And I remember in junior high writing something and everybody in class laughing. And I was like, boy, that's a great feeling. And I had some amazing teachers that were always very complimentary in my writing and very encouraging in my writing. But, you know, I didn't think of it as a career option. I got really into film in high school, still didn't think it was a career option. And so I went to college, and I was during orientation before college. And somebody from the film department got up and talked about the film department. And I was looking around like, film department, you can get a degree in film? Like, what? Like, you can make this a career? If that would have been an option, I would have done that a billion years, you know. So I immediately started, you know, going to the film department at University of Arizona and graduated with a degree and moved out to Los Angeles and started pursuing a career in film that inevitably led to me writing screenplays and getting work in animated television and then live action television. And from there, I backdoored into comics, which is something that I'd always been trying to get into, but didn't know you could. You know, it was a very, you know, there's no real career path to creative industries. You just kind of have to, there's a lot of guesswork. But yeah, because of my animation background, I was on a list and they asked me to come in, and they wanted me and several other animated writers to take a crack at comic books. And and here I am.
Okay, so, you know, just as you said, you've applied your writing talents to many different types of projects, animation, television, and of course, comics. How do the challenges differ between those professions? And was there a learning curve as you went about doing each of those different professions?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, I had luckily one of my first jobs was an intern or an internship before I graduated college for Dino De Laurentiis, this really famous producer, and I got to do coverage for a lot of scripts. And when you see how other people write scripts, you know, I got very, I was like, I could do this, you know, and you see the form that it is. And screenwriting, what's great about screenwriting is that there is kind of a definitive format and that you kind of write screenplays. But then in animation, you become much more descriptive because you're writing for artists, you're writing for storyboard artists. So the transition from animation to comic books wasn't that different. It felt very natural. The only difference is really the page turns and the pacing because you have a shorter time frame to tell a story and such. But it's far different than I think live action television, where you don't necessarily have to be as descriptive in a lot of those things, depending on, I'm sure, what show you're working on. But yeah, they're all different. And the fact that comic book writing doesn't have a specific industry standard form makes it even a little weirder. So I think every comic book writer has the way that they do it, you know, and they're often passed down to the people that came before them, and you morph it into what your style is. And so I have a pretty detailed document, my scripts are, along with like line numbers and page numbers and panel numbers and all sorts of stuff.
I say, well, actually, that's, you know, because I've talked to Scott Snyder, and he's kind of the same way. He's very detailed, almost, to me, he kind of reminds me of me. It's almost manic a bit.
I mean, listen, I'm not that detailed when it comes to certain things. I do know, like, I'm very lucky to work with some incredible artists. So I'm constantly wondering from them what they want to draw, and I love to incorporate that in the story because they're so such, you know, they're 75% of these books. I may come up with stories, but they are the ones who put it into action, and so I'm very aware of it, and I'm very like greedy in so much that I want their input and I want to know what they want to do. And I will do scene descriptions, but they're not so detailed that they don't have creative freedom. I give a lot of creative freedom. I'm not, and I say I give, what I mean is I don't care that much because they're better at this than I am. I can barely dress myself. I'm not going to tell these world-class artists, no, Superman needs to look like this, you know.
Right. Okay, so, you know, as you said, you know, in writing comics, you know, everyone has kind of their own style and everything. Did you get any, when you first started into the writing of comics, did you get any advice or mentorship from established comic writers to kind of get you started?
Yes. I mean, at first it's like I've lived with comics my entire life, so I think there's this weird innate knowledge. The first script I got was the Geoff Johns script, and Geoff has very specific rules that he kind of adheres to when he does scripts. So he would give advice that I thought was really interesting. And a lot of that, and then I would get a lot of advice from like editors. But as I've gone through, I've had conversations with other writers. And hearing how they kind of go about it is interesting. I don't think any of us, Jeff's the only one that really gave me specific advice. And it keyed me onto the importance of page turns. And in comic books, I think page turns are everything. It dictates pacing, it dictates storytelling, it dictates reveals and cliffhangers and all that stuff. And it's a really interesting part of the medium that allows you to tell a story in a different way.
Okay, so now, you know, in your time, you've written for many different publishers, including Marvel, DC, one of my favorites, Mad Cave, which, and you're, but lately, you know, your main focus has been with the good folks at DC. What was it? I mean, was it the characters at DC that kind of drew you in, or was it more just advantage of taking of an or taking advantage of an opportunity when it
It's
presented
that
itself?
one. My name was on the list. Somebody said, "Hey, do you have any ideas for the Flash?" I said, "I'm a nerd of a certain age. I have ideas for everything, you know." And I pitched them something. They're like, "Great, that's better than what we got." And so they asked me to take on the Flash. And then from there, they asked me to take on Green Lantern. And then I said, "Hey, if you ever want any pitches on Aquaman, I would love to do that." And so they said yes to that. And so yeah, I'm thrilled.
So, and actually, you led me right into my next question, because as I said, you have worked with many of the DC's foundational characters, Green Lantern, The Flash, Aquaman. I mean, there's over 80 years of stories for each of those characters. Do you ever have a feel like there's a challenge to come up with fresh ground to plow when they've got that much time, that much time with stories?
All the time. I mean, it's not just stories, it's the mythology and the continuity that's built around them, and wondering what is continuity and what's not continuity, and what do we accept and what don't we accept. That is a real challenge. I think what I try to zero in on is I try to push some of that away, and that will lead me often into a unique story without discounting anything that's gone before. And I'll just give you an example. Like the Green Lantern has this massive mythology, especially from Pete Tomasi and Geoff Johns, in terms of the emotional spectrum and stuff. And so taking those pieces and realizing, personally, I don't understand or know the mythology for every individual core. So what I did was, hey, you know what? I'm going to blow these things up. It still exists, it still happened, but I'm going to blow them up so that I can play with them without necessarily being constrained to some of those things, and do it in a way that makes sense within the comic book, but it allows me to kind of take a new story. The same thing with Aquaman. I'm not smart enough to write about Atlantean politics, so I'm like, why don't I just take Aquaman out of that so that I can concentrate on him as an individual, as Arthur, as the way he grew up, his internal thought life, and some of the stuff that maybe haven't been as explored as often. And that's really fun too. That's really fun. But it helps me get a grip, gives me time to get in on the character and learn more about the character. And I'm pretty transparent and open with fans. And so I'll learn a lot about the character just in the course of writing the book, and people bringing up things that I had no idea about. And I usually quickly incorporate those into the book. But because these comics have been around forever, and I've read a ton of comics, and I probably have a leg up on a lot of people because I've spent my life reading these things. But still, you know how it is. It's like you're reading, oh, I've read a 10-year run and I stopped for 10 years. And now I got to shoot. What happened in those 10 years?
I mean, what I kind of think I know the answer to this question, but I mean, so who is the toughest critic? The longtime fan of like Aquaman, or maybe the new readers that you're drawing in with what you're doing?
I would say it's actually newer readers. More to the point that a lot of new readers, we live in an age where when I was growing up, this stuff wasn't particular. I mean, it was popular, I guess, but not among the populace. It wasn't cool to read this stuff. It wasn't cool to like this stuff. But now it's very much ingrained in everybody's psyche. It's part of pop culture, et cetera, shows, movies, et cetera. But there's a contingent of people that feel very passionately about a version of those characters, usually from cartoons or movies or a television show, and they'll use that as like a cudgel to be like, if you don't do it this way, then I'm going to I'll be, oh, sorry about that. Then I'll be absolutely upset. And that is hard. That is a hard thing.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
The older fans, because I think I am an older fan,
right?
I think they appreciate the twist on a tale or the Easter eggs or the callbacks and certain things that I do. I really try to call upon the history of the characters to do it. But I do think it's a lot of the, if I was going to categorize it, it would probably be more of the newer fans.
Okay, so, you know, at this stage in your career, when, you know, say you're getting ready to start a new story arc for a character, does DC put any limits on you or what you can do? I mean, have you pitched an idea that they said, no, we can't do that?
Most of my ideas are rejected.
Really?
Yeah, I've pitched several story, like, I guess just to say, I've pitched several comics ideas that they don't want to do. Most of the time, it seems like a lot of, at least for me, a lot of the stuff is generated from editorial, like, hey, I want you to do a Green Lantern story, but can you keep it more Earth-centric? And I'm like, yes, that's exciting. Now, at the moment of that, or like, hey, what do you have for Aquaman? I pitched kind of an idea of Aquaman. There's a little bit of back and forth. Like the fact that Aquaman has a little bit of Mira's power is a direct result of an event that they did where people mixed up their powers. And it's like, okay, well, they want me to use that in the book. And I have to figure out how holistically to put that in the book and make it an organic part of the story. And then there'll be things where like, hey, can I use this character? And they'll be like, no, you know, or I'll have a fight over something, or can I do this or can't I do that? And sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes there's a fight about it, sometimes there's not. You know, it is a back and forth. And part of that is because it's a massive continuous universe. And they're trying to juggle pieces of stories and they're trying to respect other creators as well. So, you know, it can be difficult in some ways. But when it comes to actual storytelling, I do get a wide berth in a lot of things. And I think as I get further and further along and people can trust me that I get more freedom. That's my hope anyways. You know, I feel like that's the case. I feel like Paul Kaminsky and Jillian on Green Lantern give me a very wide berth in what I want to do, and on Aquaman and, you know, and Flash Gordon, I have an incredibly wide berth, but they also, you know, when you're dealing with anybody's IP, you don't own it. So there's a great deal of having to make sure that you keep the rights holders, you know, happy.
And it's funny you said that, because the whole reason this question came up is I was at a GalaxyCon before Neil Adams passed away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But he said something that stuck with me, and he says that you can do anything you want with a character like Batman, just as long as you put him back the way you found him when you're done, because he is not yours. And so that's basically like, you kind of what we were discussing there.
That's
so,
definitely how I treated it as a creator. Like some of my success has been about bringing things back to a status quo. And I recognize that a lot. Like I really like these characters, so I'm not trying to be mean to them, you know.
Okay, now it's, you know, you've worked with many talented artists, as you've said. Did you ever have any ambition of drawing yourself? I mean, because
I tried when I was younger, because my brother's an artist, my sister's an artist, my dad's an artist. Like, they're all incredible artists. I got the How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, and, you know, sketch out. And I can do crude drawings, but the reality is I have no patience, it just in life. And so I think that drawing, there's just so much patience and attention to detail, which are two things that I do not have at all. So I always try to go back to it and like, maybe I can get better. And I start, I'll draw a flower and then I'll be like, oh, I'm so bored. You know, like, it's that quick. So it's something that I, I wish I had the ability to do. I wish I had the patience to do it. And honestly, the stuff I'm able to draw, it's all third grade level. It's like, yeah, that looks like, Batman. You can kind of figure it out, but it's nowhere near the level it could be if it just did it more.
Actually, I mean, you can do those kinds of drawings because the reason I said that is I've talked to many writers who deep down really wanted to be artists, but
Sure.
some of the best little drawings I've gotten at signings have been from writers who like
Wow.
James DeMatteis drew a little Spider-Man thing. I thought it was great, but he was just having fun.
Well, it's like a lot of writers will figure out, and this is something I need to do, is like, okay, this is the face I need to do. Like Mark Waid, Jeff Johns can draw amazingly. When the rubber meets the road is when you're doing something that's like, when you have to do those proportions and stuff in a panel after panel in different shapes and directions, like it's so magic to me. And the artists that I know are so hilariously unhappy with what they do. Not like as a career, but like, I'll give you an example. Fernando Passeron, who I think is just unbelievably talented and is doing Green Lantern Corps with me and Morgan. There's not a page that comes in at which he says, oh, this isn't my best work. And I'm looking at this thing like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And he's kind of like, oh, I had a cold or whatever. And you're just like, shut up.
Yes,
You're so good.
really, dude.
Yeah.
It's
But
like,
that was the case with my dad too. It's like every artist that I know, and this is probably why they're so good, they're just absolutely unhappy with it. Usually it's very rare that they go, oh man, that I did a great job there. It's always like, oh, I could have done it better. You're just like, no, it's amazing. It's amazing.
I said, okay, and you actually have talked about this a little bit earlier, but when you're working with different artists, and you do your writing methods change depending on the artist you're
Yeah,
working with? And
100%.
how so?
So when I did Flashpoint Beyond with my friend Tim Sheridan and Jeff Johns, that's the first time I worked with Zermanico. And we started, and the guy's unbelievably talented, and he would take, maybe I'd post or I'd write like five panels, six panels, and he would make it into this like piece of art in itself, the way he lays it out. So when I found out that Zermanico was going to be writing on Green Lan or drawing on Green Lantern, Jeff told me, he's like, hey, make sure you keep your panel count low because he's so cinematic that he's going to succeed when you have bigger palette for him to draw. And he was 100% right. The more that I always feel a little like, oh, if I go over five panels, I'm like, oh, because when you give him room to draw scope, it just feels so like it's almost like a Stanley Kubrick film or like a Christopher Nolan thing. It's just very beautiful and wide and epic. Versus like John Timms, recently I found out that like I could put seven panels on a page, eight panels on a page. And he just has this unique talent to make those all feel very airy and big. It doesn't feel crowded. It feels very natural. And he probably should never have shown me that ability because now I'm like, well, let's just cram some more in there, I also really beg them to tell me like, what do you want to draw? What do you want to do? Amanke, who drew some of the he's drawn we've drawn worked together on different things. I saw him draw a car in this one Flash thing, and I was like, oh my gosh, you should be doing car stuff with you. Zermanico was like, I want to draw jets and mechs. I'm like, 100%, let's put him in. Will Conrad, I said, what do you want to do? And he's like, I would love to draw some dinosaurs. I'm like, dinosaur guards, issue one, because I want them to be happy. I want them to be excited about working because they have to spend a lot of time with it. And if they're excited and they're happy about what they're drawing, it's just going to show in the book, and it's such a visual medium. I don't know if you're like this, but there have been countless times in my life where somebody's told me about a critical darling book and I've opened it up and I'm just like, oh, this art is not for me. And I just close it. It doesn't matter how good the story is. a lot of times I'm like, I can't get through it. I can't get through it because the art's not for me.
Well, so I understand that you could because I call myself an artist. But yeah, I mean, art's going to draw me before the written word is.
100%.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, which is why, people look at covers to decide what they're going to get because a bad cover can mess up what might could have been a good comic.
Oh man, the disappointment is when you've got a great cover and you open it up and you're like, liars. Oh yeah.
Very much so. Okay, so as I mentioned in the opening, you recently signed an exclusive deal with DC.
Yeah.
So how long was that in the works? And because I don't know how this works, does it curtail you from doing any other like creating your own projects or anything like that?
Yeah, it came about like a month or so ago, and it's very humbling. It's very generous and kind, and it feels like, oh, I'm part of the club, you know, that's a great feeling. Yes, this particular one, I am kind of exclusive to DC. I don't have any creator owns planned. I mean, in my head, I do, but you know, it's just me going like, hey, I'm just taking this time to really concentrate on doing DC stuff, and you know, it's exciting. It's an exciting chance to see what happens when I just concentrate on one thing.
Okay, so as a follow-up, does having that exclusive—I can't even say that word—exclusivity cause more pressure, or does it relieve pressure as far as knowing I have a steady job, so to speak, if there is such a thing?
I think it relieves pressure. It makes me want to play with more toys in
Yeah.
the DC toy box for sure. And it does free me up mentally to think about DC more. And not that, I mean, half my brain's already doing that anyways, but it's great. It's great to know that, hey, you know, I've been a freelancer for so long, and to a degree I still am, you know, but it's weird to think like, oh my gosh, like DC has enough confidence in me that I can keep, you know, writing books for them. And that's exciting.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for giving me a little bit of your time, Jeremy.
Yeah.
And before I let you go, I want to give you an opportunity to share any books or projects that you want our listeners to know about. And where can they go to follow you on social media or the internet?
You can go to spacekicker.com or SpaceKicker on X or Instagram. That's kind of where I'm at. The books, I've got Green Lantern for DC. I've got Green Lantern Corum writing with Morgan Hampton. I've got Aquaman for DC. I have Flash Gordon with Mad Cave. And I have some other stuff coming out in the animation space, but those have yet to be announced. So I can't really talk about them.
All right. Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time and hopefully I'm going to get a chance to catch up to you sometime in the future, but we really appreciate you spending a little time with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of GVN Talking Comics Interview, your home for conversations with some of the best writers, artists, and creators in comics. GVN Talking Comics is a production of Geek Vibes Nation.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.